Blog Talk Radio.
Someday I'll have me a chauffeur and a block long limousine, EO11. EO11. Someday I'll have me a penthouse, stacks and stacks of Bowling Green, EO11. EO11. It's all a state of mind, whether or not you find that place down there or heaven. In the meantime, EO, EO, EO 11, EO 11, EO 11. Man that's dead, real dead. Once I had me a dream, but that dream got kicked in the head. Dream dead. I nearly had me that chauffeur and that block long limousine, EO11. EO11. I nearly had me that penthouse, all them stacks of folding green, EO11. EO11. Some judge is gonna say, I'm putting you away for 84 years and 7. In the meantime, EO11, 11.
Ooh, do it, do it, do it, do it, ski, do it, squee, do it, dow.
America is a land of heroes, a place where greatness is born, where destinies are forged, and where legends come to life. This is the home of Thomas Edison and Teddy Roosevelt, of many great generals, including Washington, Pershing, Patton, and MacArthur. This is the home of Abraham Lincoln, Frederick Douglass, Amelia Earhart, Harriet Tubman, the Wright brothers, Neil Armstrong, and so many more. This is the country where children learn names like Wyatt Earp, Davy Crockett, and Annie Oakley. This is the place where the Pilgrims landed at Plymouth and where Texas Patriots made their last stand at the Alamo. The American nation was carved out of the vast frontier by the toughest, strongest, fiercest, and most determined men and women ever to walk on the face of the earth. Our ancestors braved the unknown, tamed the wilderness, settled the Wild West, lifted millions from poverty, disease, and hunger, vanquished tyranny and fascism, ushered the world to new heights of science and medicine, laid down the railroads, dug out the canals, raised up the skyscrapers. Our ancestors built the most exceptional republic ever to exist in all of human history, and we are making it greater than ever before. This is our glorious and magnificent inheritance. We are Americans. We are pioneers. We are the pathfinders. We settled the new world. We built the modern world, and we changed history forever by embracing the eternal truth that everyone is made equal by the hand of Almighty God. America is the place where anything can happen. America is the place where anyone can rise. And here, on this land, on this soil, on this continent, the most incredible dreams come true. This nation is our canvas, and this country is our masterpiece. We look at tomorrow and see unlimited frontiers just waiting to be explored. Our brightest discoveries are not yet known. Our most thrilling stories are not yet told. Our grandest journeys are not yet made. The American age, the American epic, the American adventure has only just begun. Our spirit is still young. The sun is still rising. God's grace is still shining. And my fellow Americans, the best is yet to come.
Hey, everybody. James Bostic here, Conservative's Perspective, asking the same question I have asked at the beginning of the program, lo, these many weeks. Show me the Democrats who say what the president says. You're not going to be able to do it. I know it's a rhetorical question. We all know it's a rhetorical question. The Democrats will never say the things that the president says. The Democrats will never uphold the ideals that the president, along with you and I, hold. So consequently, being fundamentally opposed in many of their you know, in many of their own ideals from their ideology, being fundamentally opposed to all those things that are good and right and true in America, no, there's not going to be a Democrat that's going to stand up and say this. But we're going to ask nonetheless, because hopefully somewhere, if we can create enough discomfiture in people who vote for the Democrats who will never say this, maybe they'll hopefully re-examine themselves. James Bostic here, Conservative's Perspective. We do it live Tuesdays and Thursdays at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time here on the Patriot Nation Radio Network at Blog Talk Radio, putting the blah, blah, blah in Blog Talk. Blogtalkradio.com. And we have links to Patriot Nation all over the place through Facebook and a lot of other places on social media. So you can find it pretty easy. Patriot Nation Radio at blogtalkradio.com. We also have a recorded version of the program that goes out over the Mojo 50 radio network, mojo50.com. If you're not listening, you should be. It's the very best, really, in libertarian and conservative talk radio that you're going to find out there. And that goes on the air 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Sundays. Great slot, perfect for a news and commentary guy. And let me tell you what, I just chew that mess up and spit it out. It's good to be here with you. And we got a guest tonight. And as you know, we are not, until here recently, we haven't been primarily a guest or even a caller-driven show. Being the egomaniac that I am, in love with the sound of my own voice, don't need it. But whenever I do bring you a guest, I can guarantee you that it's going to be somebody worthy of listening to. Tonight is no exception. Our guest this evening, I'm going to go ahead and pull him up here while I give him the build-up. His name is Hal Moroz. He's from Georgia. He is running currently. He's campaigning for a seat on the Georgia State Supreme Court. He served in the military, and then later he also served as a district attorney, a county judge, a city chief judge, all within the great state of Georgia. He's prosecuted criminals, and he has represented military veterans in courts up to and including the United States Supreme Court. Everything about this man's life has been service to a greater cause other than himself. And we are fortunate to have him here with us tonight. There was some scheduling problems last week. Some things went wrong. But, you know, that's just radio business. And he's here tonight, and we are happy to have him. Mr. Moroz, welcome to A Conservative's Perspective, sir.
Well, James, thank you. I am honored to be on your program. And my friend, I never heard a better intro to a program than I did tonight. And I'm not talking about what you said about me. I'm talking about the words of our president. Honored to be here. Honored to be a part of the fight for the conservative principles I think you and I hold dear, and your listeners do as well. Thank God for it.
We're, like I said, we're happy to have you here. Tell us a little bit about, I guess maybe just, well, let's just start off with you, Al. And tell us a little bit about yourself. We obviously see from, you know, what we said there in the introduction, it has been a lifetime of service. And what were the things beyond military, before the military, that might have instilled that in you?
Well, James, I was born really in poverty. My father was a longshoreman. He died when I was five. He served in World War II in the United States Navy. My mom never graduated high school, but she wanted her kids to have better than she did. It's a part of the American dream. And at the age of 17, a couple of days out of high school, I joined the Army. Spent 21 years in the Army. The first person I ever voted for was Ronald Reagan in 1976 when he ran against Gerald Ford, who was the incumbent president in the primary.
Right.
We know Reagan lost, but those ideals of love of God and country, service before self, believing in the power of the individual as opposed to what the government can do for you, because you know and I know whatever the government can give you, it can take away as well. And I believe our rights are God-given. Those rights in the Constitution were never given by people. You know that, and I'm preaching to the choir right now. But I've always been struck by the notion that you can do whatever you're willing to do in this country to better yourself. And if America is not the land of opportunity, I don't know what is.
Agreed.
After I got out of the military, I served in the airborne infantry. Don't hold it against me. I jumped out of perfectly good airplanes, did that 21 years of my adult life. Loved the military, loved the Army, loved the ethic of the military. At a time when men of courage were few and far between, I stood among the most courageous people on this planet, and just proud to have been a member of the United States Army and leading young Americans in a cause that I believe is the preservation of the freedoms we have. After the military, I thought, you know what? What is the easiest transition? Rules, regulations, a uniform, which happens to be a suit. I went to law school, and out of law school, I wanted to do something. I wanted to fight domestically. I took an oath to defend our country, you know, from enemies, foreign and domestic. And I looked at that the same way. Do we have problems here at home? Do we have a fight at home? And I think we do. Not only against criminals, but to preserve those rights we have, you know, the very core of what makes us American. And I'd like to think I've held true to that. I did that as a prosecutor. I did that as a judge. I did that as an attorney. And none more proud than I am today to actually take the fight to the Georgia Supreme Court. And, you know, fight the good fight for the citizens of Georgia and truly the citizens of America, because I see problems with the court. I consider myself in the mold of Antonin Scalia. I think he was the ideal of what a judge should be, neutral, impartial, abiding by the law. And the highest law of the land is the Constitution. And the problem is today we see too many folks who defer to what pleases them now, and we see people substituting the law for their will. And once you do that, you've gone down a slippery slope. You begin divining laws that don't even represent the Constitution or the state statutes. And we're doing that today. And, you know, we would be fools to ignore it. I haven't ignored it. The only thing I can promise is I will bring the law back to the state of Georgia, and I will do that from the Supreme Court, insisting upon judges adhering to the law, not making up laws, but going by what is the law, the Constitution of Georgia and the Constitution of the United States. That's what I'm all about, my friend.
You know, George Washington once said that the Constitution was that place to which the wise and the honest can repair. And we see on this program, you know, we're kind of like Don Newman and Donna Fiddish, our friends, and, you know, we kind of look at things on a national level with a touch of human interest, but we see so many examples of predominantly folks on the left, but they're all over the place, that are all too happy to subvert the ideas and the values within the Constitution at the altar either of their own personal gain or a political ideology that's becoming more and more alien to American thinking.
I agree, James. And
how do we stop that, I guess, is what I'm trying to look at.
No, I'm with you. You know, you quoted Washington just now, and what else did Washington say in his farewell address? He said, avoid entangling alliances.
Foreign entanglements, yes.
Haven't we learned that from China, for crying out loud, what we're going through now? And I'm not going to comment on all. You know, I happen to think the media has its own agenda. And
yes,
unfortunately, many people are going along with that agenda. You know, in truth, what do we have, 30 to 40,000 people a year die on the highways in America? Do we see anybody running away from cars and throwing away keys to cars or anything like that? No. But it is interesting to see how the media can drive narratives and how the media can actually influence the citizenry. And that's a scary thing because, you know, the press that is spoken about in the First Amendment to the Constitution, I believe there are few and far folks in the news industry who honor those two words, the press, because, you know, our founders revered the press. Our founders respected the press so much that they were included for protections in the Constitution. I think the people we see today, by and large, are partisans with an agenda that, unfortunately, is not American. It's more of a globalist agenda, and the laws are construed to meet that narrative of the globalist agenda, and I, for one, am not on my watch. We have a United States Constitution. The citizens of America come first. And we need to recognize that, not this thing about, you know, folks traveling through Mexico trying to get here. All of a sudden, somebody divines that, you know what, they have the protections of the Constitution walking through Mexico. The truth is they do not. You can't find that in the Constitution. But yet we have people who construe the Constitution, contort it, actually, in such a way as to make it unrecognizable by not only our founders, but patriots like your listeners today. And that's the truth about the problem we face in America.
And I agree with you totally. I think that these folks, it's a disingenuous motive when these folks talk about, and I've always said this, when it comes to the Constitution in terms of it being a living, breathing document, forever amenable to change or interpret, and through the courts it is open to interpretations. However, those interpretations I feel are somewhat limited. Plus, it is not a living and breathing document. The founders said what they meant. They meant what they said. Now, while it is a resilient and remarkably flexible document, it is not this. It applies to the citizenry of the United States, and it doesn't apply to anybody else just because they happen to wind up here.
So true. You know, we have folks who think the Constitution is to be used as the winds of change. You know, whatever way the opinion blows, so blows the Constitution. I don't believe that for a second. You're right, James. The Constitution is one of those sacred documents, and I'll call it that, a sacred document.
Yes.
I'll go back to Washington. Washington said America is founded on two things. You know what they are? The Bible and the Constitution. Those are the two things America was founded on. Unchanging. Yes, they adapt to the times. You know, you read the Bible, you can apply those things today to your life. President Reagan said, all the answers to the problems in our lives have been found in the pages of the Bible. And so true with the Constitution. You want to know how our government's organized? Go to the body of the Constitution. You want to know your rights? Go to the amendments. It's that simple. And it's not something that, you know, is only left to rocket scientists. Your right to bear arms is a right given to you by God and the founders. Protecting yourself, protecting your property, and truly protecting your country is what the Second Amendment is all about.
It provides against tyranny. That is the common defense that the Constitution talks about. That against tyranny. And I had something else I wanted to talk to you about. I wanted to ask you how. And I just got a question from one of our board ops here. They're releasing convicts. They're releasing prisoners due to this corona thing. But they've implemented these policies. Philadelphia, I think, is one of the places, and they've been doing it in San Francisco. They're not even bothering to arrest these people. They're not even placing them in custody. They're writing them tickets and letting them go for nonviolent offenses, burglaries, robberies. The thing that confounds me about all of it is these things are clearly they run contrary to any concept of law and order that I'm familiar with, and I'm sure probably you too.
You know, there is a very thin line between chaos and anarchy and the order we have in America today. You know, James, I know you've been overseas. I think we've been the places where, you know, the moment we return to America, we say, thank God for the order we have in America, you know, for all of the rights we have and all of the privileges we have that are not to be abused. When we talk about criminals, we talk about people who abuse privileges in America to the point where it negatively affects others. It violates the law. And that's where our police come in, and God bless these folks. You know, I say that every day when I run across them. You know, we got people out here who are in a society that's ever more liberal if you listen. And you find that the police are the objects of ridicule. We saw that in New York this past summer, you know, where police officers were just, you know, brutalized in the street. And we didn't have the type of response that said, wait a minute, you will not do that to the officers. You know, and James, I'm wondering how old you are, my friend. I don't know, but I'm 61. Okay. And I remember Dragnet as a kid. You know?
Oh,
and
yeah.
I remember
Joe Friday.
You're
talking my language. Right.
Yes. You know,
Joe
Friday,
my language.
He was the one who said, you know what, if you have somebody who's going to attack a cop, it is so much more important to get that person off the street, because if they don't even respect someone who's carrying a gun and has a badge and is there to protect others, then you know what, you have a person there who will not hesitate to destroy others and walk all over them. And that's the common citizens. And, you know, I learned a lot of lessons as a kid watching Dragnet. But you know what? Those were the times you could watch programs. They didn't have the ideological left-leaning bent where you would say, you know, wow, everything I learned is wrong. You know, relationships are wrong. How I act in public is wrong. You know, that's what we're fed, you know, garbage over the airwaves. But we have to have constants in our society. And that's why I think the judiciary is so important. There's a Latin phrase. I learned this in law school decades ago. It's called stare decisis. And it means just let the decision stand. If we have enforcement of the law, it needs to stand. You don't flex it. you know, you don't allow others, you don't have a two-tiered legal system. Unfortunately, I think many people have that perception, and for good reason, that we have a two-tiered system. All you have to do is look at the political landscape in America.
Absolutely.
You know, we have great people. You know, I just see two types of enforcement that go on in the at the Capitol. You know, one for one political persuasion and another for another political persuasion. And you know what I'm talking about. And they destroy lives while others walk free and ridicule and continue on. And that can't be allowed. And that's why, you know, we today, who would have dreamed? My father would have never dreamed that we would have sanctuary cities, sanctuary states that coddle criminals. Is that amazing? You know, are we still in America? That's the question.
It seems to be on a lot of levels. And what we're talking about here, I think particularly, and it would seem, of course, not being a witness to, you and I have seen about the same slice of history. Yeah, we run tight in the same demographic there. And I haven't seen it all. It would seem to me that this time, that we live in now, and you remember the tumult that went on in the late 60s, early 70s with Vietnam and civil rights and the gains that were supposed to be seen as societal positives, the gains that they claimed were made at that time. And we see this disintegration, respect for those things like the police officers, like your first responders, your firemen, your cops. You know, these guys are the adhesive that holds a lot of our society together. And when we see people in the judiciary that are taking positions contrary to protecting law enforcement as well as protecting the citizens, where the offender is given privilege over the victim, we got some serious, serious problems.
We do, James. And one of the problems we have is a deviation from the role of our judicial officers. And by that, I mean this. And I walk a fine line on your radio program right now. You know, there's such a thing called the code of judicial conduct. You know, you never ridicule the profession. You never, you know, speak bad about other judges. You know, anything that would draw negative. I'll tell you what. I don't know of any prohibition against the truth. Antonin Scalia spoke the truth. You know, when the Supreme Court ruled on issues that he knew were diametrically opposed to the Constitution, he raised that flag and he said, we're on a hazardous course. He did that routinely. You know, we've had rulings that say, you know, you can't have the Ten Commandments in a classroom because kids might look upon it and be influenced to follow them. Can you imagine that? You know, heaven forbid that we would have kids follow the Ten Commandments. So what do? We remove it. You know, boot God out of the schools, boot God out of the public square. Hasn't that been the trajectory we're on? I say thank God that President Trump, you know, brought back Merry Christmas. You know, and I mean, my Jewish friends say it. It is so strange to hear a straight-talking person these days that, you know, we all speak in a certain tongue that's politically correct, and you don't say certain things. You don't call wrong wrong, and you don't call right right. You know why? You're a bigot. Or you're prejudiced in some way.
Yes.
But the truth is, there is only one truth. You know, and if we can't recognize that, then you know what? Our worst fears have been realized. I don't believe that's true. I think the president has a lot of support because people recognize the need for a straight talker. Can you believe we have a politician in the White House who actually promises something, then follows through with what he promises? Is that unheard of? You know? Who is this guy?
It frightens these guys. It does. It frightens people on the right and the left. I think it absolutely does. The guy is not beholden to anyone. He is self-made. And just him watching, in my mind, and I've said this many, many times, I find him to be one of the most intuitively gifted psychoanalysts of the last 60 years. He is able to divine what makes people tick. He is able to get what he wants. He's the negotiator. It's not called the art of the deal for nothing. And this guy knows the inside and the ins and outs of it. And to me, I've never seen anyone in the White House as canny as Donald Trump when it comes to dealing with foreign, you know, with other heads of state or with political adversaries here in America. He's remarkable at that.
You're not kidding. You know, President Reagan was my standard for what a president should be and how he should act. But I'll tell you, for a time such as now, you know, with what we have going on in the country, we need someone who's a fighter in the White House. And we need a truth talker. And, you know, I'm going to get back to this because I'm on your program, you know, and I've been, you know, heralded as a, you know, a candidate for justice. And what I stand for, James, is being biased about the Constitution and the laws, strictly interpreting them and not deviating from them. You know, I will be impartial to parties that appear before the court. I will hear them out, but the standard will always be the Constitution. And that is the constant I will stand for. I cringe when I hear folks who are not independent, who have the biases, and those biases show. You know, I love God and country. It doesn't mean I can't listen to a particular argument about a facet of the law and make a decision. But that standard will always be, does it comport with the Constitution? Does it violate the Constitution in any way? Now, you know, we've come to such a crazy age that, you know, we can't say certain things, such as you love America, and then have an expectation that, well, does that mean you won't rule against America? And the answer is, yeah, you're darn right I'm not going to rule against America. You know, and that's where we are today. You know, people go, really, you wouldn't entertain, you know, one of these novel ideas or these novel relationships or you know, having a child born and then letting, you know, the governor of Virginia decide whether that child should live after it's born in consultation with the mother, you know, and what happened to the protections to life? You know, what happened? You know, the Constitution says you will not be denied life without due process. And meaning, you know, if someone violates the law, capital offense, where statutorily they're allowed to be put to death, then you know what? They have had their due process. They have been adjudicated right by a jury of their peers, and they are put to death. You know, I just wonder who is looking out for the most innocent, the most helpless among us. And I include that in all these notions of socialized medicine, you know, where rationing occurs. And I fear we're seeing that now in Italy as this coronavirus takes hold. And I've read stories of people who are over 80 years old are not getting medical attention because you can't ration it to them. And is that what we want in America? I think not. You know, I'm a capitalist. I love this country. I love our Constitution. I can be fair and neutral. Just give me an argument worthy of testing the law. But don't give me an argument that goes beyond the law and changes what is clearly written and clearly understood as the intent of the founders.
When you look at what the president's done, how in terms of the inroads that he has made in correcting some of the things that have been happening with the Ninth Circuit and with federal judges in general. It's something that's not spoken about a great deal. We don't talk about it a great deal. But he has made tremendous strides and has set up the Constitution and conservatives who follow the Constitution probably for a long string of victories and a force that will be stable in preserving the Constitution as we know it for a long time.
Well, James, the truth is, before this administration, the Ninth Circuit had the notorious distinction, and the Ninth Circuit is the largest territorial circuit in America. It encompasses, you know, California, adjoining states, Hawaii, but its pass rate in the United States Supreme Court was abysmal. In truth, decisions made in the Ninth Circuit, which detractors call the Ninth Circus, it had a roughly 87% overturn rate of appeals to the United States Supreme Court. That tells you something. That says, you know, a circuit is out of sync with the rest of the country, with the high court, the highest court of the land, that being the Supreme Court. And what the president has done, I think, is added balance to the Ninth Circuit. You know, and that's obvious, I think, in his judicial picks. And I think he's set a standard, and people cringe at a litmus test, but a litmus test is for the Supreme Court. Are you willing to listen to a case and match the merits and the arguments against the United States Constitution as written? And if it doesn't match, it doesn't meet that test. And the president's clear test is he wants someone, anyone on the court who will abide by the Constitution and render judgments that comport to the Constitution. And he's doing that. He's doing that right now in the hundreds.
And this, and like I said, this is to me once these, and God willing, we're probably looking at another 4 years for these good works to continue. He's setting up a breeding ground, like I said, that's going to stand in protection of the Constitution and stand as a bulwark against any threat to it for generations.
Well, you know, that's one of the things, James, that President Reagan said. You know, his great regret after leaving office was he felt that the changes he implemented were not institutionalized. And a part of that institutionalization is having a court that's balanced, a court that respects the Constitution and abides by it. You know, judges don't only interpret the law, they also have to abide by the law. You know, and one of their oaths is to support the Constitution. And that's something to remember, you know, when you hear these interesting pronouncements from the courts. That's all I got to say on that.
Okay. We won't go any further then. What do you think about some of the – and we got to do a little bit of politics, and we're going to do it on national. What do you think about – is this potential implosion that's coming that we've seen in the Democrat Party for the last couple of years now? You know, it's picking up speed, and I think it's going to reach a point of terminal velocity right there in Milwaukee at the convention when – and it could be that Bernie gives up. He's under a lot of pressure right now, and he may stop. He's already quit some Facebook ads, and it could be that he's sizing up within the next two primaries or so whether or not to stay. But if he does get enough delegates to make it to Milwaukee and Joe winds up with it anyway, I guess what I'm asking is this the first stake in the heart of the Democrat Party, or is this the beginning of the end, or the beginning of the end of the beginning?
You know, James, I look at the composition of both parties, and when I see a party that has an avowed socialist who is running and has been running neck and neck with another career politician. I wonder, you know, what on earth has happened to our political discourse in America? You know, when we were kids, do you remember Scoop Jackson was in the Democratic Party? He was considered a conservative, you know. But do you know of any today? And this is a conservative perspective, so this is clearly a part of the program. Where are the conservatives today, James? Where are they? You know,
we haven't seen them in a generation. We haven't seen them. I think that they began their sunset in the time of the Clinton administration. And from there, we've just seen, under the guise of being center left, this continuous drift to the left, to where we've got these folks now, you know, walking the halls of power in terms of the DNC and Democrat leadership, political leadership throughout the country. That it's difficult for me to imagine my fellow West Virginians, you know, folks that I went to school with, folks I've grown up with, you know, who are Democrats. And but it's tough for me to see these people, because I know them, really going to the point at this stage with Democrat candidates on the national scene and actually holding their nose and voting. It really is hard for me to see that. And I think that it's what did Ronald Reagan say? He didn't leave the Democrat Party. The Democrat Party left him. And I think that's a lot of this, where they've gone to this extreme left-wing Marxist progressive, you know, banner that they're carrying now. And they've left a lot of Democrat voters behind in the last two election cycles.
It is so true. You know, we've entered a phase in America that I'm sad to say, you remember Katrina when that hit New Orleans. And, you know, I hear that mentality today from people, such as, you know, we have this coronavirus. Why aren't we getting guidance from the President of the United States on what we're to do? Should we leave our home? You know, what should we do? Scared puppies, you know. And the problem with that is, what happened to American ingenuity? I don't think the settlers who, you know, traveled west to, you know, form a new continent, the continent we live on, I don't think those American settlers turned back and looked for a government to help them on their journey. You know, these were people who made it, and they made it any way they could with what they had and the core ethic that they had. And that was pure Americana. You know, now we have folks who, and they've been conditioned to do that, I think, by our government schools, to ask, what can the country do for me? What a great strive from President Kennedy. Remember that? Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country. Well, it sort of seems like the reverse today.
Yeah. In less than 60 years, we went from a man, you know, an idealist, and he was, in spite of all his flaws, John Kennedy was a great idealist. He would be laughed at today in the Democrat Party. We've gone from that to socialism. Every single person, and you can go back out to when there were like 40 of them up there at the first debate. Every single one of those guys raised their hands and said, yes, we believe that illegal aliens should have health care and it should be on the taxpayer's nickel. Every single one of them. There was even one crazy guy that said that transgender men have a right to abortions. And nobody disagreed with him, Hal. Nobody disagreed with him.
Of course not. That's the talk that's no longer tolerated these days, James. Remember, it used to be the right was intolerant, you know, and then all of a sudden, when the right became tolerant and allowed others, you know, the full speech, what happened to those who claimed to be oppressed? They all of a sudden denied speech to the right, and you see that today. Yeah, it's just an amazing dynamic that's taken place. We've moved away from the core principles that make us America.
I think, too, that what we've seen, and there are two things going on here. There's yin and there's yang. You know, for every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction, and that's what we see, too. Nixon talked about the vast silent majority, and he was talking about these folks at a time when it was the left, and what was the SDS, the Student Democrat Society, and a lot of these left wing militants were out doing the things that Black Lives Matter do. They were out doing the things that Occupy Wall Street did. They were out doing the things that Antifa does now. And well, you remember that time, Hal, and you know what an uptight, intense time it was all over the country. And Nixon made the speech, and he referred to that silent majority. And I think that it was that silent majority that turned the tide and was able to get Nixon reelected. And I think that we also see this silent majority, it rose up again with the threats we saw from the left in the form of Barack Obama, his minions, and the folks that we have in the House of Representatives and Congress. And it was that silent majority that came in once again and were the people that elected Donald Trump to try and make yet another course correction to bring us back on the right track.
Yeah, James, and I think of this, you know, when we talk about the silent majority, who are they? They're the working men and women of America. You know, people who were actually making a way for their families, building better communities. They don't have time for the shenanigans you see in that Antifa movement. Who has time for that? No one. I want to thank you for the opportunity, seriously, to be on here, because I know a lot of people right now are out of, temporarily laid off from their jobs because of the coronavirus. But I do look at it this way. It's like I'm living a life now where I don't want to regret not having done something, you know, and I so appreciated your invitation to come on the show because, you know what, there are Georgians listening to your show, you know. And the truth of the matter is this. I have heard 1 out of 8 people don't even vote on their ballot for a judicial candidate. Think about that. 1 out of 8. They just leave it blank. You know, 1 out of 8 will put a mark next to somebody's name. And in truth, do you really know anything about the person? I don't know. You know, I think not. I don't know when I'm looking at a ballot about some people, most people. And the truth of the matter is, I'm an open book. You know, I've written many books, and those books all have my philosophy. I'm an open book. You know, people are going to cringe seeing some things. I have heroes in my life. You know, in the Army, I love General Robert E. Lee. You know, he was somebody who hated slavery, loved the South, loved Virginia. But he believed in the Constitution. He believed in the sovereignty of the states as political entities. He believed in those things. The South has more Medal of Honor recipients than any other region in the country. There's a reason for that. You know, it's still called the Bible Belt for a reason. It's still called America. And those are the type of things I write about and I have written about. Last year I wrote a book when I was contemplating this run. It's called The Making of a Supreme Court Justice. Easy to look up my books. They're in the bookstores. You know, if you're online, Hal Moroz, HALMOROZ, and you'll see book after book after book about our country, about God and how we should continue to revere God. I'm a Christian. You know, Jesus Christ is my Lord and Savior. I don't shy away from that. I'm not ashamed of the gospel. I'm not ashamed of our military or our police. I'm not ashamed of anybody who works for a living, regardless of your job. And your job may be raising children. God knows we need people who can raise children these days to be
Amen.
Upstanding adults. And I don't know if we have that anymore, my friend.
Well, I would speak optimistically about that. I'm in the school business myself. My daytime job is I work with a group of special education students in the high school that I graduated from. And there are, or at least in our community, I can say that there are good moms and dads out there, and there are moms and dads that are doing their jobs. And to them, you know, thank you. It makes my job tremendously easier when I don't have to do everything. And there are, but overwhelmingly, that kind of concerns me. And another thing that concerns me is I'm somewhat concerned as to the level and direction of history education in our school systems as well.
Hey,
and that goes
totally
back.
Agree
that goes
with
back
you.
To what you're talking about.
Yes. Yeah. You know, impressing young minds is an awesome responsibility. And, you know, thank you for taking that seriously. But, you know, we see examples day after day of folks who are abusing their positions as teachers. We see people abusing their positions in government. And you begin to wonder, you know, did they really take an oath, and did they believe in the oath they took when they set out on that path? James, I may have been painting a bit of a negative picture, but I'll tell you, I am hopeful, and I'm encouraged. I'm encouraged because of people like you who do this, who contact, you know, who are truly like Paul Revere. You know, you're telling what's going on, and you're motivating people to be better citizens, to be active in government, and to do the right thing for our children and their children. And that's what it's all about. You know, if my goal is to leave this life a better place than what I found, you know. And my parents gave me that direction. People I came across in the military and the civilian life today. You know, I meet people who work in courthouses, people on the street. President Reagan said it, you know, if you want to look for heroes in America, you don't have to look very far. Sometimes they're right across the dinner table from you, and how true that is. So there is hope here. And my friend, I'm fighting the fight to give us greater hope in our judiciary, because I love the judiciary. It has a clearly defined role. And I want to make sure we don't deviate from that. And we honor what the founders gave us with America. And like Reagan said, you know, there's no guarantee this will be here for the next generation. And I think that's why you're on the radio. I think that's why I'm doing what I'm doing. And I think that's why people who are listening are being motivated by the words you say. And I thank you for that.
Well, I appreciate that, Hal, a great deal. I know now you've spent almost an hour with us, and I know you have a lot of things that you need to be working on, and we're grateful to have had you here. Are there any websites? Have you got any campaign information that you can get to us here to let the folks know? Because I tell you what, I've enjoyed this tremendously, getting the opportunity to speak with you, and were I a citizen of Georgia, you would have one more vote. I can promise you that.
Sir, that means a lot, and your prayers will help as well. But, James, my campaign website is pretty simple. It's morozlaw.com, morozlaw.com. That's my campaign website. I'm open to people contacting me. You can contact me at Hal, H-A-L, at morozlaw.com. If you want to know what I'm about, just look me up, Google me, and read the books, and you will be helping out this effort to, keep America great.
Ladies and gentlemen, we've been talking with Mr. Hal Moroz, military veteran, judge, lawyer, working his way to the Georgia State Supreme Court. We wish you the best of luck, Hal. If the voters take any time at all to get to know you and they pay attention to what you're saying, you are going to be in like Flynn, my friend, and we look forward to having you come back on the show after your victory, and we can talk about that as well.
Well, thank you, James. Honored to be here, as I said, and thank you for putting light on a conservative perspective. I mean that. Thank you.
God bless you, Hal. Thanks a lot. We'll be talking here soon. Thank you once again for being here with us. That was awesome. That was absolutely fantastic. Hal Moroz, ladies and gentlemen, state Supreme Court candidate from the Peachtree State, Georgia. And like I said, Georgians, thank you for listening. God bless you who are out there. And, you know, you don't have to stop with tonight. We do it live Tuesdays and Thursdays, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We also have a recorded version of the show. It is the top of the hour. We're going 90 minutes, but we're going to take a little break right now. And we will be back, obviously, with more of Conservative Effect. That's easy for me to say, but I talk for a living. Kids, don't try that at home. Only trained professionals. We will be back with more of a conservative's perspective after this brief musical interlude.
Here comes one now. walk a little slower. I wonder if you know that you're putting on a show. Could you please walk a little closer? I'm a girl watcher. I'm a girl watcher. Watching girls go by. My, my, my. I'm a girl watcher. I'm a girl watcher. Here comes one now.
Daggone right we are. Playing probably the most chauvinistic song I can find here in the 21st century. James Bostic, a conservative perspective. Man, that was an awesome guest. Hal Moroz, ladies and gentlemen. You Georgians out there, you got a good man running for the state Supreme Court. You honestly do. That was terrific. Terrific guest. I'm glad that we got him on, and we'll look forward to having him back. Well, who are we going to talk about now? That poor old Bernie Sanders. Things have gotten tough. And, you know, and by the way, everybody is talking. My brother and I got in this conversation just yesterday. We were working out. And my brother Bernie is a science teacher, and he has a pretty strong background in science. We both do really coming from seed that was rich in historical significance and scientific fact. And, you know, we're talking about the coronavirus thing, you know, and at this point, confirmed globally, there are 197,140. Well, this is from yesterday, so it's probably gone up. So we're probably looking at maybe 225,000 cases, deaths. At the time of this posting was close to 8,000. So we'll say nine. And everybody is making all this noise about Italy, and they're generating fear about Italy. And Italy is now, for some reason, according to the media, it's become the new ground zero. Never mind China. You know, China, where the Chinese virus started from. Did you hear those idiots? Somebody was trying to call the president on the carpet for calling it a China virus after the mainstream media, the lamestream media, these clowns, Maddow, Acosta, guy's name, that George Costanza looking guy, Stelter, Brian Stelter, Costanza. That's really an insult to George Costanza. but you have all these people that have said the Wuhan virus or the Chinese coronavirus or, you know, the coronavirus spawned in China a million damn times. The president says it. Well, you racist SOB. Who the hell are you, you orange bastard, to talk about these good Chinese people? Are they going? If I call Chinese food, am I going to be nailed as a racist? If I call Mexican food, am I going to be a hater? Do I have to say tacos, burritos? Have to name each individual dish that I'm talking about? I can't just say Mexican food or Chinese. Peck sniffs. So everybody is all, you know, they've got their. They've got their O-rings prolapsed over the fact that Italy, this alleged advanced European nation, has become this hot zone of impact when it comes to coronavirus. And the implication, of course, by the media is that if a first world country like Italia, with the equivalent of Medicare for all, if they... Like that's supposed to be good. Oh, my God. Okay, so the implication, obviously, is if a first world, you know, cutting-edge country like Italy, a country with socialized medicine, if they could succumb to this pandemic, then, you know, it should probably be really serious here in the USA, right? No. In spite of all this coverage and hype about Italy and COVID-19, there are a couple of items concerning the epidemiology, or the cause, for those of you who are Democrats, the cause of the virus's impact on Italy is being overlooked or ignored fundamentally by the mainstream media. Why? Because it doesn't fit with their narrative. They want Italy to be looked at as this paragon of health services, this forward progressive nation that, you know, obviously they're a forward progressive nation. Why? Because they got Medicare for all, you doofus. Everybody knows that all socialist, progressive, forward-looking nations have Medicare for all. Some of the Neanderthals and idiots like the United States that don't have it. That's why the coronavirus is so scary. Look what it did to Italy, for crying out loud. Again, despite what you hear and see on the television and the radio, or I guess I should say the radio and the television, I guess I said here first, you get the idea. Anyway, what you see and hear in the media, all this hype about Italy and the Wu-Tang virus, Wuhan virus, there's some things that they're not telling you. And true, if there is one country, according to the Times of India, if there's one country that has suffered the most due to the COVID-19 beyond communist China, it has to be the European country of Italy. But what is the connection between Italy and this novel coronavirus, considering that the deadly virus is reported to have originated in China? Why is Italy now the hotbed for this? Elementary, Watson. The obvious answer is so fashionably simple. The northern part of Italy has been a traditionally prosperous region due to the flourishing fashion and garment industry. Most of the big global brands like Gucci and Prada have their base in this region of the country, northern Italy. Okay, you're with me. All right. What does Gucci and Prada have to do with Red China? Well, I'm happy to tell you. With China offering the cheapest manufacturing options in the world, it shouldn't be really a big surprise that most of these fashion brands were working with China. A large number of these Italian fashion and garment houses had outsourced their manufacturing to Chinese labor. Specifically in where? Wuhan. That is correct. You are absolutely right. Italy has direct flights from Wuhan, and reports suggest that over 100,000 Chinese citizens were working in Italian factories. China has made a slow and steady move into Italy, and many Italian fashion firms are now owned by the Chinese as well. There are probably more than 300,000 Chinese in Italy, and over 90% of that 300,000 work in the Italian garment industry. Now, as per reports, there are thousands of small companies that are active in their exports. So the region is also very interconnected with other parts of the globe. So you've got all these people from Wuhan, China, moving back and forth between northern Italy and Wuhan, spreading this disease, but you haven't heard that anywhere but right here on Roller Derby, ladies and gentlemen. So that's why northern. And there was another thing additionally that helped do this. The Chinese government, when they realized that they had botched disastrously how they handled the outbreak and spread of this virus, decided rather than to own it and try and make good, you guys are a bunch of racists for saying that this is a Chinese virus. Chinese people are good people. We didn't send this virus out. And so some woke scold in Italy, some left-wing Percy Pecksniff, decided to come up with a campaign, and I am not making this up, because you guys think I lie all the time anyway, and I don't. I don't lie all the time. But I'm not lying now. I'm not making this up. They came up with a campaign where to show that you weren't racist, that you were cool, that you were hip, that you were with the in crowd at school, you were supposed to hug, yes, walk up to, place your arms around some Chinese cat. Absolutely. So all the empty-headed millennial Tide Pod, El Tido pod-eating types in Italy, that's what they do. And additionally, northern Italy, as it turns out, is the equivalent of a petri dish. Nearly 60% of the population of northern Italy is aged 40 and over. And of that population, about 25% of that is 65 years of age or over. And that puts nearly one-fourth of the population at very serious risk. So when we talk about this pandemic and we look at northern Italy, okay, as this focal point that all the Chicken Littles in the news are screaming, or this is the sky that's supposed to be falling, let's take a look at a few things. You got a boatload, well, several airplane loads of Chinese coming directly from the province, from the city in China where this pestilence was conceived. And where are they going? They're going to this one quasi, very large area, but still restricted, kind of selected area, because this is where the garment industry is located, geographically in Italy. And so they're there. I'm sure they're going across other places within the country to meetings or satellite offices or fashion shows or whatever that are happening throughout the country itself. So they're there. But they're all gathered in this area in northern Italy. Now, when you couple that fact that you got about 300,000 grubby, snot-nosed Chinese people running around there, crouping on everybody, and that these 300,000 grubby, snot-nosed Chinese croupy people are – snot-nosing and crouping on a population that is remarkably susceptible to this strain of a coronavirus, well, you got problems. You got bad problems. And when you couple that with probably what is already a vastly overloaded medical healthcare system due to the influx of Muslim immigrants and illegal aliens that are coming across from North Africa through the Mediterranean and through Turkey and Greece into the southern European countries. I'm not surprised that all the old people are dying. Doesn't mean it's going to happen here, people. While I'm not saying that this needs to be disregarded, we have to exercise care. I've got an 85-year-old mother that I take care of, and I don't want anything to happen to her. And I sure in hell don't want to be in a position to where I'm responsible for, endangering her health. So we're doing the precautions. I'm not worried about it myself, but we're doing the precautions. And, I work in the school system, and, school systems are closing down all over the country. Our neighbors in Kentucky have closed for the school year. They're done. They're through for the school year. That's how serious. And is it that serious? I don't know. It's not that serious for young people that are strong. You know, yes, it's serious for the elderly. Yes, it's serious for the, you know, people who have compromised immune systems. And I'm not taking anything away from this at all. And I don't want to see another person die, not only here in America, but all over the world. I don't want to see another person die from this disease any more than I would want to see people die from the flu. Last year, we had 22,000 people die from the flu. Millions were infected. Is it really that serious? Well, you know what? I think that's a question that is best answered by saying, it depends. In Italy, in northern Italy, hell yeah, it's pretty serious. It's pretty serious. In places in Europe and in other parts of the world where they have socialized medicine, second, third tier type medical care, it's going to be a problem. It is a great concern here in the United States, and the president has people work. The president has the best people that you can find working on this, and they're making strides day and night. Israel may be simply days, if not weeks, away from a vaccine. Wash your hands. Be clean. Be careful where you go. And if you got to kind of, you know, like kind of self-quarantine yourself, do it. I mean, restaurants are closing, so, you know, you're going to have to get groceries. You're going to have to get takeout, one of the two. And it is, like I said, of serious concern to the elderly and those who have compromised immune systems. And we got to watch out for them, just like we watch out for everybody else. But they put these things out and they don't give you the full story. The president wants to close the borders. You racist, you xenophobe, you bastard. Okay. So so at the end of January, the president issues an executive order restricting travelers from mainland China, Red China, from entering the U.S. He did this 2 days after the Italian prime minister issued the same order for his country. They call him a racist. They call him a xenophobe. But obviously this guy, you know, apparently the Italian prime minister had the presence of mind to do the right thing. And clearly the president of the United States was ahead of the curve on, you know, when it came to people here in this country. Right now, I think we might be right at 100 deaths. I'm not downplaying this tragedy, people. But to a certain extent, I have, it would seem to me, legitimate concerns as to what I would consider in some cases the overreaction to folks, you know. And there's a narrative here, and there are certain people that want you to be scared, just like Hal Moreau said. They want you frightened, okay? Take a look at that whole toilet paper thing. People hoarding toilet paper for a respiratory ailment. My God. Oh, my God, Bob. Well, let's see. What's about 8:18? Yeah, we're going to... I got this. I found this the other day. I want to, and it may be the only time we get to hear it, because I don't think we'll ever get to hear the man himself. God forbid we get to hear this guy actually read it. But I have a copy, and I can't really go into a whole lot of detail as to how I got it. Well, okay. All right. After his latest round of primary triumphs, not only is Joe Biden confident that he will receive the Democrat nomination, president, I think he will. He is so certain that he will be elected in November, he's already written his inaugural address. And someone close to the Biden campaign leaked the text of the speech to me. And talking it over with some of my friends in the podcasting business, I've come to the conclusion it is in the public interest to publish this speech in its entirety or read it to you. Look, in the interest of full disclosure, the person who leaked the text to me was Joe Biden. He thought he was handing me a piece of pizza. Here's the text. President McKinley, Vice President Tyler, King Vidor, Queen Latifah, Duke Ellington, Earl Warren, Baron Trump, Judge Reinhold, ladies and gentlemen and others, this is a day that's going to live in infamy. Today, I consider myself the luckiest man on the face of the earth. 47 years ago, I was born in the house that my father built. I can't recall the address right now. Today, it seems to me, though, providential that fate would have chosen Brunau on the Inn as my birthplace. Now, some of you may have gathered that an iron curtain has descended upon my brain. The mystic cords of my memory are on the fritz, and then some. I have slipped the surly bonds of sanity. Old soldiers never die. They just fade away. And though I was never a soldier, I am definitely heading south, cerebrum-wise. But don't cry for me, Argentina. Ich bin eine Hamburger and Frankfurter and spring roll with some Bosco. Yeah. Bosco. I have a little note, nor long remember what I say here. In fact, I've already forgot what I'm saying now, and even what I'm going to say next. Can't tell my wife from my sister, which was embarrassing on stage, and then really embarrassing. We were staying in a hotel one night there on the campaign trail. But not to put too fine a point on it, you know, I'm Daffy, I'm Dottie, I'm Gaga. Lady Gaga, rah, 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 Roma, 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 Gaga, ooh, la, la. Since my mind's gone totally blank, I don't really have anything to offer but blood, sweat, and tears. Not to mention the Rolling Stones, Aerosmith, the Nicholas Brothers, Casa Loma Orchestra, the Beach Boys. Yes, once more, onto the beach, dear friends. Bring your surfboards. Surfing USA. I wish you all could be California girls, even the boys, and the trans boys and girls. Welcome to the Hotel California and Beach Blanket Bingo. The beaches. Men of Athens, I vow to you this day that I will fight on the beaches. I'll fight on the landing grounds. I'll fight in the fields and the streets. I'll fight in the hills against all the neurologists that have begged me not to accept the office of President of the United States of Brazil. I will fight no more forever. I admit it, my fellow Belgians. I'm not playing with a full deck. The lights are on and nobody's home. The elevator no longer going to the top floor, and it was never a really tall building to start out with. That doesn't matter to me now because I've been to the mountaintop with Corn Pop and Cocoa Pops. That'd be Mount Everest, of course, the peak of which was first reached by my dear friend, Hillary Clinton. Granted, I have the body of a weak, feeble woman, but I have the heart and stomach of a king, and of a king of England, too. I won't let them crucify mankind on a cross of gold. I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me the blue plate special with French fries. Vive le Quebec, libre. You know, by the end of this decade, we're going to send a man to Poughkeepsie. Have you seen the hair on my legs? I have a dream that one day in Alabama, little black boys and girls will be able to join hands with little white boys and little white girls as sisters and brothers, and I'll get to fondle all of them. Now, you may not want to know whether your new president is a crook. Well, I am a crook. Let every nation know that I will oppose any friend and support any foe to assure their survival and success, provided one of my relatives gets a piece of the action. Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what your new president can do for Burisma. Mr. Gorbachev, give me liberty or give me, you know, the thing. Thank you and God bless. And you know what? That takes us right up. I think I'm going to go ahead and call it a night with that one. ACP Heard Here Live, Tuesdays, Thursdays, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, Patriot Nation Radio Network. You guys, hang tight. You've been checking on Mark, and I know he's happy to hear from you. He's doing fine. He misses you, too. He's going to be back soon. There's been some work changes there based on the coronavirus fears at his place of employment. And so he's not going to be on the air for a little bit longer, but he'll be back. And when he comes back, you can bet he's going to be loaded for bear. And I can't wait to hear that first show. That's all the time we got. Tuesdays and Thursdays live right here, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. The recorded version Mojo 50 Radio Network, mojo50.com. You're not listening. You ought to be. Sundays, 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Mojo50.com, the very best libertarian conservative talk radio out there. That's all the time we got. You guys take good care of yourselves out there. We're living in a kind of strange time right now. And keep an eye out on the people around you. Make sure everybody's okay. You can do that in your neighborhood. You probably got some old people. Look in on them. Give them a call. Make sure they're doing all right. See if they need something from the grocery store. Keep an eye on each other. God bless you. God bless America. And we'll be back next Tuesday taking a look at things as we do through a conservative's perspective. We'll see you then.